So I think we'll get started. Thank you all for coming, and welcome Stephen Downes here. He's a senior research officer in e-learning for the National Research Council of Canada's Institute for Information Technology, based in Moncton. And Stephen is going to talk to us today about blogging in education, wikis, and whatever else I guess he fancies to talk about. So, welcome, Stephen.
I thought this talk was an archaeology. I'm very sorry. I have a different... No, I'm kidding, of course. Thank you. Thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to be here in Wolfville at Acadia. It's more people than I expected, which is great. The title of today's talk is roughly Blogging in RSS and Learning. And that's basically the topic that I'll be talking about. I will hit on wikis a little bit as well. Now, before I get launched into it, I'd like to get an idea of where you guys are at. So how many of you have a blog already? Yeah, okay. So I don't need to spend a lot of time on definition of a blog and stuff like that. How many of you use wikis? Okay. How about RSS? Okay. Why are you here? No, I'm kidding.
Because you could tell us why we need to use them.
All right, yeah, tell you why you need to use them. Okay, well, that's great. That means I can go faster through the earlier sections. I will cover the earlier sections in case there are people who aren't familiar with the terminology, but I'm not going to linger on them as long as I might. I'll focus more on the later part. Particularly RSS, which is an abiding interest of mine. I'll spend a little time looking at the EduRSS system that I've been working on, DLORN, and talk a little bit about the theory behind that and how that's intended to be used to support learning. So, yeah, so this should be fun. Any time during the talk, if you have a question or a comment or anything like that, by all means, jump in. It allows me to have a short break and have a sip of coffee. And more importantly, it allows us to have some sort of interaction or conversation. You know, if I was just going to come here and talk, I could have done that from home, use video. But the capacity to have interaction and conversation is what makes it worth coming down here and into this room. So, by all means, and feel free to disagree with me, not violently though. you know, if you have arguments, if you don't like the direction the talk is going, steer it where you want it to go, because this talk's for you. This is your time that you're spending here, and I'd like you to get the most out of it. We finish 11?
Yeah, we're aiming for 11.
Okay, great. I always like to confirm these things before I start. Nothing like planning a one-hour talk for a two-hour slot, or worse, a two-hour talk for a one-hour slot. So here's the overview. As I said, we'll skip editorial comments already. the overview, we'll skip reasonably lightly through the first sections, and I'll linger a bit more on the later sections, where we'll have lots of fun. So a blog, as many of you already know, is basically it's a website. It's defined not by its content, although you'll read in the media a lot of blogs like an online journal or something like that, but it's the format that makes something a blog. A blog is a website with a series of individual dated entries, typically called posts. And these entries are displayed in reverse chronological order, such that the most recent entry is displayed at the top of the page, older ones further down the page, so that when you go to a blog, you can catch up simply by starting at the top of the page and reading down. What has made blogs, in my view, such a success, and they are a success, there are more than 4 million active blogs out there, that's well documented by now, inactive blogs as well, but what has made them a success is the ease of use, the ease of creating content and publishing content. Let's push this button. It's been quite a lot of talk, especially in the last 4 or 5 months, about the uses of blogs in learning. It's only this year that blogs have really taken off in a big way in an academic environment. People like Will Richardson have been doing it for a few years, and a lot of pilots were run last year, but it's this year that it's really taken off in academia, and you can see blog projects. You need to do a search on Google for something like blogs in education or something like that. You'll see dozens and dozens and dozens. Various uses that have been proposed. This is not my list. It's from Crooked Timber, which is a very popular group blog. But this is fairly typical. And you can see progression of the use of the blog in an academic environment from a fairly straightforward replacement of the typical course web page, because it's so easy for professors to put in their course content. And then once they're doing that, they sort of move down the list. They start adding items and resources to support their course or their research. In the paper that I wrote for EDUCAUSE Review recently, I gave the example of an archaeology professor who's posting resource after resource about archaeology. And one of the things I noted there, and I think this is important, is that as a professor begins to do that, it's not simply a transfer of resources and information to students. One of the characteristics of a blog is that it's personal. It's a personal expression. They're typically written in the first person. And so when a professor blogs about their own work and their own research and brings in these resources, the readers, who are typically the students, get a sense of the interest that the professor has in the subject and passion for the material, and that carries over into the student's attitude toward the material. Eventually, it ceases to be just a one-way sort of communication, and the students are drawn into the process. Typically, they would begin by adding comments on the professor's blog, but eventually they would begin using blogging software themselves to organize themselves, to set up and even have class discussions, seminars, and eventually they create their own blogs. They begin blogging their own resources. One of the great examples of that, I don't have the link here, David Wiley at Utah ran a course on new media in learning, had all of his students have their own blogs all the way through. And it's interesting to see the students' reflections in this course as they're exposed to new technologies which they hadn't seen before and new ideas about how they can be used in learning. And it's useful for someone like me. I'm in this field sort of working at it professionally, but to see the reactions of people as they're exposed to this, as they're exposed to the background readings, they're pulling stuff out that I've never seen, and also they're giving me a fresh point of view, a new way of looking at the subject, which is helpful for me because I'm steeped in it, and sometimes when you're deeply immersed in something, it's hard to see what it looks like from the outside. And finally, blogging becomes part of the coursework itself. People have blog assignments, you do your reading, write an essay on a blog or a book report or whatever. I'm not so enthused about the idea of assigned blogging, because if we come back to the root of blogging, blogging is personal. Blogging is your space. And when you begin to get directives from outside about how to use your space, it ceases to become yours. So there's a balance that people are finding in the use of blogs in education. A number of people have observed this. Will Richardson, again, who I just mentioned, is one who's seeing this kind of tension here between blogging as a genuine forum for expression and blogging as a learning tool. And it's not clear that you can do the both at the same time. I think what happens is a lot of students have two blogs, right? One is their official school blog, and they spend the minimum amount of time on it that they can. And then the other is their real blog, which they have under a pseudonym, so nobody knows it's them, and it's on LiveJournal, and they say whatever they want. You're probably familiar with these blogging systems. We have two major types of blogging systems. The hosted system, which is where somebody else sets up a website and software, and you log on to their site and your blog basically sits on their system. One of the earliest and most well-known is Blogger. Blogger was set up by a company called Pyra, and then was purchased not too long ago, a few months ago now, by a company you may have heard of called Google. And it's interesting, people ask, well, why would Google buy Blogger? One of the things about blogs is because they are genuine representations of what people are interested in and what people want to link to. Google is able to use the combined blogs of Blogger to assist in ordering its search results. So I expressed it yesterday. It's like Google tapped into a global brain to power its search system. So it turns out it was pretty smart. What Google has also done is to use blogging to support its AdSense program. That's a program where a webmaster can sign up for Google Ads. The Google Ads that are displayed on the web page are related to the content of the page, and Google is allowing blog owners to post these ads, and any revenue generated by them is split between Google and the blog owner. So I have a blog, an unofficial blog, set off to one side. And in another 100 months, I'll get my first paycheck from Google. Now, I want to spread it. People talk about blogging. There's been a lot of fuss and a lot of talk of blogging. But I'm always cautious to say that blogging is just one element in a wider field that is commonly called personal publishing. Personal publishing branches out in two major directions from blogging, and they're indicated here: course management systems and wikis. How many of you are familiar with any of the systems that I've listed up there? PostNuke, Scoop, Drupal, fewer. Course management or content management system is sort of like a blog system on steroids. What it does is it allows you to set up typically a news or a community website, sign up members, and have the members create posts or news articles that can be read. And again, the course management system, like the blogging software, will take care of the formatting and the presentation of your site. But it allows the site owner much more flexibility than the blogging software would. I'll just pop one into one very quickly so you can get a feel. Oh, well, that's going to pop up my browser, but it's not where I wanted to go. Might not even pop up my browser. Yes?
Will this PowerPoint be available after?
This PowerPoint will be available on my website later this afternoon. Now, why am I not... There we go. It's just being slow. Oops. And... Okay. Come on. La-dee-da-dee-da. My hard drive crashed recently, and I got a new hard drive in. And my new hard drive does interesting things. I don't know if it's a hardware problem or a software problem. Now, okay, this isn't at all where I wanted to go, but that's the link I clicked on. Let's see if I got, no. Whee. I always forget where the home page of this is. This is PostNuke. It's an install on my own system. This is basically what it looks like out of the box. All of this can be customized. When you go out onto the web and you go to various community or even blog sites, you begin to recognize this format. It's a very common format. And you begin to realize that, oh, this isn't Blogger, this isn't Movable Type, this is PostNuke or Drupal. They're a very common arrangement with the three menu or the three columns like that. And these are the stories. They're very short stories in the middle. I generally don't have a whole lot of imagination when I'm writing a story in front of a group of people. I'll sign in, and that'll give me administrator access here in just a sec. And here's the administration panel. You can also have little icons. I don't really like the little icons, but let's just pump up the size a bit. There, that should make it easier for you to see. That's much better. So as an administrator of a content management system like this, you have many more options than you would running a blogging system. As you can see, you can set up banners, you can block things, you can add censorship, don't really support, but set up a download area on your site, build a FAQ, set up for multiple languages, assign permissions to various members of your site so that they can add content or approve content. Various other settings. Set up what are called blocks. Blocks are chunks of content. And as you can see, you can define what position they go in on your site, when they would be activated, when they would not be activated. You can go in and edit the contents of these. So here's the block for the main menu. And it's a little hard to see with the text this size. And these are very popular, and they're good for high-traffic sites. They're good for sites that are communities with a large number of members, and they're good for more formal sites. An institution probably wouldn't want to have a blog as its homepage, but it could easily have something like this. PostNuke that I showed you here, and the other systems in my list, Drupal, and oops, there we go. No, I always get the wrong one. Scoop, Drupal, Plone, and there are others. Zope is another one. These are all free software. They're all open source software. They're generally very easy to install. PostNuke, I installed, and it looks it. I installed it in about half an hour. Scoop is a bit harder to install because it's written in Perl. It requires the setting up of mod Perl and several modules, but the others are written in PHP. Very simple, easy install. Pretty much you just toss them onto your website and they almost start running on their own. The wiki is something that you're more familiar with. I like wiki. I hate wiki spam, which is a big problem that's begun to afflict wikis over the last few months or so. A wiki is a website that basically anybody can edit. Any reader can come in, don't need permissions or logins. They just come in and edit the page. And you might think, well, that's pretty silly. How could you possibly have a website that anybody can edit? But I have a link here to a site called Wikipedia, which I know some of you are familiar with. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. It's got more than a million articles in it on different topics. The content is comparable in quality and accuracy to Encyclopedia Britannica, and that's been measured, it's been checked, and it has more readers.
Is that possible? I mean, Alberta is part of the world, right?
Alberta is part of the world, yeah. And nonetheless, Wikipedia exists.
But if Alberta can even... You know, people who vote for Ralph Klein can log into this and change the content.
I can log into this and change the content. Let's pick a random page. It's pretty random. And let's hit edit. And here's the edit box. No, wiki spam is really horrendous. It's set up by automated content generators, and it's a piece of software that just goes from site to site to site and spews links onto the wiki. And what they're trying to do is increase the Google ranking of the links that it spews. So, you know, I get all kinds of gambling sites and weird kind of drug sites and so on. It just spews these things. It just destroys the page. This is wiki graffiti. So I'm just tagging the page. I'll save the page. So I've actually, this is actually on Wikipedia now. This is a genuine change. And there it is. How can I get away with that? How could an encyclopedia possibly work when anybody like me can come along and put a note that says, "Hello, people from Wolfville"? That's what that says if the text is too small. That's what I added right there. The thing with a wiki is, where can I find it on this page? Oh, there we go. There's a list of all the previous versions of this page ever. And if somebody comes along and sees my graffiti, they can use this list and very easily revert to a previous version. It's, in fact, easier to revert previous content than to add new content. So it's even easier to take comments out than to put comments in. What will happen now, and also if we go back to the wiki homepage, I'll have to go back a wee bit. Here we go. I need to find it because I never remember where it is. Recent changes. All wikis have a changes page, which basically lists all the changes that have been made on any page in the wiki. So there are people out there, thousands of people, who come into Wikipedia and check out the changes page, see what's been changed. Things get changed all the time. There's my change right here. So already you can see how much activity there's been. So they see the change that's been made. Let's take a look at the difference, perhaps. They can click on the history if they want. So, what's been changed? Oh, look at that. It's graffiti. Revert to the previous page. And the community of wiki users is more dedicated and tends to outnumber the community or the aggregation of people who vandalize wiki pages. So they'll come along, they'll look at this, they'll remove this graffiti, and the article will revert. And it depends on the article how quickly it takes to revert. But the content generally tends to stabilize around an accurate statement of whatever it is. The other thing with Wikipedia, what makes it good as a source of information, is because anybody can make a change to the page. If you want your editing to stay, then what you write has to be acceptable to the other people who are interested in that page. So you can't go in there and write, George Bush is a big fat liar, because there are Republicans who can use this and say, put the word "not" in there. And so you're going to have to word it something like, some people have questioned the authenticity of George Bush's statements. And even that would be kind of dubious. And then sometimes things really go off the deep end. And you get a lot of changes in a short period. And then Wikipedia, because it is so busy and so popular, they sometimes lock a page and refer all the changes to a discussion area. But by and large, this doesn't happen. By and large, the site, the wiki, organizes itself. Go ahead.
How are they fighting against the, this is wiki spam, but how are they fighting against the
links? I'm not sure what Wikipedia specifically is doing about it. Wikipedia has enough members that it probably disappears almost as soon as it goes up. But there are a variety of tactics that are being used. In my own case, I have a wiki set up on my own site, and I've been hit by wiki spam. And I've got a twofold solution. One thing is I've taken what's called the movable type blacklist. And that's the list of the URLs that people are trying to put on your site. And I've adapted that to filter wiki content. So if somebody tries to put one of these things on my site, if it's one of those links that people are trying to spam, then the comment will be blocked. The other thing I do on my site, and I have found that both are necessary, is that I've set up a little bit of JavaScript chicanery on the submission page so that when you make a submission, MyWiki checks and confirms that the comment came from the submission page. So that an automated content submission thing can't just dump content in my system. If it's coming from any other page than the submission page, then it'll be rejected. And because there are people out there, and you know, they see these errors, they rewrite their scripts so that it'll work anyways. What I do is I ban the IP that tried to submit content from an unauthorized page. What else? I also have a little thing set up so that there's a little window that pops up. Like just click a button before you can get to the edit screen. Actually, check a box. And basically, it's, you know, yes, I am not a spammer. And again, anything that interrupts that flow of automated processes works. Now, that one, when I put that one in, that worked for about a day.
So is it possible for somebody to put a commercial link on your wiki?
Yeah. The question is, how long will it last?
Well, actually, my follow-up question is,
over there?
Just a comment on how quickly some of these get changed. Looking at history of that page, his changes were reverted 1 minute after he made them by somebody else.
There you go. 1 minute.
I'm really serious about who are these people who have the time to. Yeah. I don't get it.
Write all these.
Who's that guy that just fixed that? What is he doing
with
that?
I don't think people necessarily actually sit down and look for those things. Like, I've made changes in the year before. I looked up Acadia. It said Acadia Advantage started in 98, so I changed it to 96.
On a wiki note?
Yeah, on this same site right here.
And do you have a wiki note for it?
I just looked up Acadia and happened to notice that it was wrong. So
well done.
But did you ask? Yes.
I was looking around and you notice things that you know.
Ultimately, I think you're going to begin talking about RSS, which is how you are notified about changes to certain things. And if you look at the history for this page, the same person who reverted that change was the one who made the last change to this particular article. So that person has a vested.
Don't mess with my page.
Don't mess with my page.
This is like a subculture of these things on the world, isn't it? Yeah.
This is a subculture of geeks. Well, not necessarily geeks, because you saw how easy it is to edit, right? You don't need to be a geek to contribute to Wikipedia. Basically, all you need is a browser and internet access and an interest in some subject. But people adopt pages. People have an interest in certain subjects, and Wiki is becoming the authoritative reference. Wikipedia is replacing Encyclopedia Britannica, and if you're an expert in whatever, I can't even pronounce what's.
That's a lot.
Right. If you're an expert in that, you want the entry in Wikipedia to be accurate. Now, I've edited pages in Wikipedia as well. I went in and they had the Klondike placed in Alaska. So I moved it. But the thing is, one of the things that I do is I like to go to Wikipedia on the homepage and hit random to see what comes up. And if I see anything wrong, I fix it. It's just something to do. I could watch Seinfeld. Or I could contribute to a global encyclopedia. And sometimes I watch Seinfeld, sometimes I do that. So there's a variety of motivations. And it's interesting because the authors don't really get a whole lot of credit for this, but there's something neat about contributing to this. When you hit that submit button and you've added a paragraph of good content that really adds to the information on that page, you feel good. And there are enough people now connected to the internet, it takes only a small fraction of them to build the world's largest encyclopedia. So it works.
Any idea on how many
people are contributing to the Wikipedia?
I've heard the number 10,000 core, and then numerous others. The core might be, you know, a few contributions a month or whatever. I'm not sure whether I'd class as core or urban. If I class as core, then the real number is much smaller than 10,000. But it's in the thousands for sure. Is that going to be the right one? Wikis, again, you can install your own wiki. Typically, the software is written in a computer language called PHP, which is a scripting language that's embedded into a web page. There are also wikis written in a language called Perl. Perl is my own native language, and so that's what I prefer. The thing about a wiki is it needs a community. If you're one person, a blog is the way to go. If you're a small community or you're an official community where the content matters and appearance matters, then a content management system is the way to go. But if you're an amorphous, larger community without static rules of membership or anything like that, then a wiki is the way to go. Wikis are great for project organization and doing collaborative work on the fly. Where you don't need to be formal or anything like that. You just need to get the ideas in there. And I use my own wiki more as a scratch pad. I put notes in it. I put links to it. I've done conference talks. I'll set up a conference, a talk, a wiki page, things like that. There wasn't enough time to get that kind of information out to this group. But typically I would have had a wiki page set up for my talk before I came. Then you could just go in and type whatever you thought about whatever I was proposing to talk about. It gives me a little information before I come here to do the talk. Now we move into the more interesting stuff. Blog aggregation. I'm not really sure about this order of the slides here, but the concept of blog aggregation is, if you take 4 million blogs, active blogs, you take the content, you pull it together in one place, you can do interesting things. And one of the major interesting things, one of the earliest, is to just list the most popular posts of the day. So here's blog decks. And I wish I could make my size bigger faster. Control plus plus. Control. Shift. It never works. See, it's not control plus. It's control equals. Things like that bother me. Alright, so. Yeah, I see Lycos is spamming the blog decks list. They've been up there for a couple of days. There's no way, but anyhow. The idea here is that blog decks list the most popular sites being linked to by blogs today. I like blogs a lot. I go to blog decks almost every day because blog decks for me is better than the daily newspaper because the content selection isn't by some editor or editorial board with certain vested interests in what I read. The content is what people are interested out there on the internet. And so all kinds of stuff comes up here. But we get past this Lycos garbage. Tiny P2P, there's been some discussion of that. Root burn, don't know what that is. I'll probably follow it later. 10,000 Firefox enthusiasts make history, so that's probably being linked to Canada goes to hell. So there's always something, and the thing is, I think there's a very good research study, and I've sort of done it a little bit, but I don't have the time to do this in a dedicated way. Compare the headlines that show up on these blog aggregators with the headlines that are put in your newspapers. And it's interesting. There's overlap, of course, but the overall range of topic priorities is very different in the blogosphere and in the newspapers. So that's one site. Am I going to get... No, I'm going to get that one again. There we go. Popdex, Daypop, the Blog Digger, Technorati. These are all sites that do pretty much the same sort of thing. Now, me being me, well, I'm very sensitive to world opinion and cannot link locate internet server or proxy server.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it. I kind of like Blog Digger because what I do, I search for myself. So here's what is being written about me, or my name, has my name in it specifically today. It's pretty neat. So, now of course there are some other Stephen Downses in the world, but let me see what we got here. And I found out about them through this. There's a restaurant reviewer in Melbourne. There's actually a Stephen Downs who ran as an MVP candidate here in Nova Scotia a little while back. That wasn't me, it was someone else. There's a Stephen Downs in Utah. Kind of neat, but so this is about a conference in Vancouver. I've forgotten what it's called. Northern Voice. This is the interview and some of the links that I covered. So I go in there and I find out what people are saying about me. And you might think, well, that's pretty egotistical. But the thing is, people who are interested in the things that I write are likely to write things that I am interested in. And so I find dozens and dozens of new resources if I follow my own name. Now, of course, you don't have to search for yourself. Let's see what the world is saying about Acadia today. If anything. Well, there's a link from my site, my OL Daily, where I mentioned that I'm coming here.
Put in Acadia University, remember?
That might be better, yeah. And Blog Digger, it'll make me put it in quotation marks. Okay. Something about the library, China's Me Generation. Something in there. Educational Commons. That's the communique. So that's how easy somebody can find out about Acadia. Now, if I were running the university site, I'd put a link on the front page to something like this, so people can see the coverage. Although, I guess this one is either slow or blank. I don't know. Well, it doesn't matter. Acadia schedule. Kind of useful. Something about Linux. Yeah, so on. So, blog aggregation takes blogs to a new level. Blog aggregation interests me a great deal. One of the things that I've done is gone to conferences and set up a blog aggregator for the conference. I don't know what this will look like right now, but and there we go. So, I went to a conference last August, 2003. I set up the aggregator, and all of the people who went to the conf who wrote blog posts about it, gathered them together, displayed them on this page. It became an instant conference newspaper. Now, the actual references from the conference are quite a bit older. They're way back here in 2003. But here are the posts that were posted from the various sessions, the back channel, the keynote, so on. Anybody who logged into that page could get continuous coverage of the conference. Now, what it took me to set that up Well, took me about 15, 20 minutes to steal their design, because I didn't tell Merlot that I was doing this. Well, not until after the fact, at which point they said, please take it down, except they didn't tell me, they told someone else, so I never got the message. So. set up the feed in the middle there, took less than 5 minutes, took actually about 30 seconds or so. So I've done this for a few other conferences since then. It's very easy to set something like this up once you have the tools. If I can do this for myself, if I can do this for Acadia University, if I can do this for a specific conference, you begin to see the power of blogs working in combinations. And that's what really gets me going about blogs. You have all of these individual voices acting autonomously and linking to each other. So they're creating a network. And then these aggregators are things that are able to detect in an automatic fashion the patterns that present themselves within the network. And you're able to pull out of that the interesting material. You were first by a second.
You said this is a live feed, so is this still getting information?
Yeah, this is still sending information out about Merlot. The conference, of course, is long over. It turned out the following year, the 2004 conference, it sort of became a conference aggregator for that conference as well. That's up here. So here's the 2004, all the announcements, the sessions, and so on. Because I just never took it down.
So
no reason.
Where's it coming in from? Which are the aggregators?
Aha. Okay, this is in a later slide, but I'm running low on time, so I'll tell you about this now. I've set up a thing on my website called EduRSS. What EduRSS is an aggregator of RSS feeds. So what's an RSS feed? An RSS feed is a file created in a language called XML that describes the contents of a site. Here's an XML file. I'll go to the source of it. I have a little thing that makes it easier to read on the top of it. But here's what it looks like. You can't really see that very well, can you? Oh, this is another one of these control equal equals. Okay. I said this is XML. It's typical XML with the little angle brackets. And there's two major parts to an RSS file. The first part is just some information about my site. The title, the link, the description, when it was last updated, which would be last night. And then below that, we have a series of items. It's not very well formatted, but here's where the item begins. So here's an item. Title, blogging and education, the link, the description, and then another item. Here it is. Title, podcasting, the link, the description. The format or the organization of an RSS file is therefore basically the same as the organization of a blog, where you have the separate posts, and these posts are listed one by one. So an RSS file basically captures a snapshot of the contents of your site at any given time. And the reason why we use RSS is because it's a standardized format that can be read by computer programs. Computer programs like EduRSS. Computer programs like BlogDex or Technorati or BlogDigger or the others that I showed you there. The other thing about RSS is for most people, RSS files are created automatically by their content authoring system. If you use Blogger, if you use PostNuke, if you use a wiki, this software, assuming the settings say please do this, this software will automatically create this file. You don't need to worry about it. You don't even need to know that it exists. You just go in, you type your entries, and they pop up, and they're on a nice web page. The system behind the scenes is generating these things. You can recognize them if you go out onto the web and look at different web pages. Typically, a web page that has an RSS feed, the owner will put a little orange XML button, or sometimes it says RSS, on that site. And that XML button will point to the address of the RSS feed. If you use Firefox, come to the other. If you use Firefox, down here in the corner is a little orange button. This is the release candidate for 1.0, so it says RSS. If you downloaded Firefox today, there'd be a little icon, still in orange, down here. And that will point you to the RSS feed for a web page that has one. You can set up your web pages so Firefox can tell that your web page is there. And what's neat about Firefox, you click on that, you can subscribe to it, and it pops into your bookmarks. I think I have it in here twice now. And there's the list of all the articles from my newsletter as collected by Firefox's built-in RSS reader. That's what I mean by automatic data aggregation. So, I built one of those. Specifically, I built something called EduRSS. And the theory behind EduRSS is that, unlike Blogdigger or Technorati or any of these others, I'm not trying to aggregate 4 million RSS feeds. I don't have a computer for that. But also, most of those 4 million RSS feeds, I'm not interested in. Now, I don't care about the daily life of ants, or well, I do care very much about the daily life of ants, but you know what I mean. So, EduRSS selects feeds that deal specifically with the topic that I'm interested in. Here are the feeds that I harvest. They're all about learning and technology, learning and new media, that sort of thing. And actually, if you're trying to find resources about the field of instructional technology and new media, that list is a great place to start. And then you can just see all of these different blogs. So, there's one. I just picked it at random. So, I harvest these. And then I bring them into my site and I apply a filter to them. And the filter, again, allows me to be much more selective in the content. See, with all of these sites, any given day, there will be an awful lot of content. This page is content produced in the educational technology blogging world in the last 24 hours. There's a few things. Well, there's a lot of things. There's really a lot of things. And most of this is really interesting, actually. Now, most people can't handle this much content. It's just too much. Right. Pardon? Well, you can't. It's too much. That's why people like sites like Blogdex or Pop or Daypop, because they'll show just the most popular. And so Blogdex will still run the most popular 200 or 300 or whatever items. What I've done is I've created a thing called EduRSS Topics. So I take all of the content that comes in, I compare it with a regular expression. It's sort of a way of doing a search. And then I organize the content that has come in into different topics. So here's Blackboard. And this is a feed specifically about Blackboard. And the reason why this is a good feed about Blackboard is I've been selective in bringing in the content, and then I fiddle around with the regular expression a bit so that I get as good as possible results from that. And then I just let it run. I haven't looked at this, done anything to make this work for ages. And this runs. It just runs. And so this is a lot easier to keep up with, right? There was one item today, Blackboard adds over 1,000 new courses. I actually saw that yesterday, but Now, some of the recent discussion on my site and some others about Blackboard, WebCT, and whether learning management systems have a future. So that's December 14th. Then the 11th, there was something. School blackboards are turning white and interrupt. You still can't get a perfect delineation from y'all. And I look at that and say, well, I don't really mean to talk about blackboards. I should go in and fiddle with the regular expression of it.
I noticed you had blog lines in your URL history there. I'm subscribed to the org feed through that, but also the different technology feeds and stuff like that. I just wondered if you wanted to...
Yeah, I was going to mention that, and I sort of got diverted. But, yeah, blog lines is a really nice thing. Oops. What? Uh-oh. Oh, this is so not good. Okay. I didn't want to be on that one. That's where I was. Here, I want to be on that one. Bloglines is a site that you can sign up for. You sign up for an account with it. It's free, of course. The reason why you sign up for an individual account is you can now subscribe to individual RSS feeds. You remember that orange button that I showed you? If you take the address that you find there and you just hit this button and toss it in there, then the blog will show up on this list on the left-hand column. Each of these corresponds to an RSS feed. Here's mine. And here is my RSS feed showing up in blog lines. This is a really easy way to keep up with a lot of widely different RSS feeds, because if there's new content, the site will be in bold, and you'll see how many new items are. You can see I haven't read into RSS for a little bit. That's like about a day or so. Okay. Here are sites where there's no new content. You notice the text is not in bold. So I can pop in, and I do this, in fact. I pop in, click the bold thing. Here's the thing that came from Robin Good today. And so, learn how to be a digital DJ. You never know what you're going to find on these things. Again, because the list on that site is the feeds that I subscribe to, the odds are excellent that whatever pops up there is something that I'm going to be interested in. If I was interested in golf, I'd have a completely different list on that site. I'd have various golf blogs. And I'd learn all about, I don't know, some golfers. I don't really like golf, so it wasn't such, I guess it was a good example. So, one of the things I did with EduRSS that was a little fun, and we'll see this a little bit more as well. I'll we'll just pop back into this. It's going to be silly today. Well, what that is normally is a ticker. It's a headline ticker. I don't know why it's not producing any headlines. It should be showing up right here. But basically, it's one of those little scrolling headline things. What this little piece of software does is it contacts EduRSS and gets the headlines, and it updates them every few minutes. I don't know why it's not working. Was working. Isn't that on? Oh, well, I'm not going to fix it standing here. We come back to EduRSS topics. Now, one of the claims that I make, and this is an empirical claim, I stand by this claim, is that I've picked one particular feed. I've picked this feed on learning objects, to be precise. I argue that this is the most authoritative source of information about learning objects in the world. What newspaper is going to cover this? Maybe a few magazines. What one website could pull together this kind of material? This is the most authoritative source. It pulls in the content of pretty well everybody who's working in the field and presents them here on a day-to-day basis. So you can verify that empirically. You can look at the coverage here. You can go look at the coverage anywhere else you want and compare it for yourself. Now, what's kind of neat is EduRSS also produces RSS feeds for each one of those topics. So what you could do, and I know people do this, because this topics page is, it gets, on my site, it's the third most popular page. Subscribe to this feed, and then we'll pop back into, shall we say, blog lines, and we'll click add, and we'll add the URL, and we'll subscribe to it, and we'll wait a couple of seconds because things are slow. And there it is. Okay, everything seems fine. We'll click the subscribe button. And now, we'll have an EduRSS feed specifically for, it's kind of hard to text this big to find it, specifically for learning objects. It should be in here somewhere. It should be one of the dark ones. I just can't find it. I'm not sure that's it. Yeah. There it is. Now, I need to make that title a bit better to actually indicate what the topic is. But that's something I'll do it one of these days. Because right now, if you subscribe to a bunch of topics, they'll all just say EduRSS search, EduRSS search. It's not so good. But I intend to put the actual name of the topic into the title so it's useful. But now, you have in your blog aggregator very up-to-date information on the topic of learning objects. The principle that I appeal to, and where I think that this is going, is that the mechanism that I just described eventually replaces many of our needs, not all necessarily, but many of our needs for search. You have the individual producers, and this is blog sites, content management systems, wikis, newspaper sites, magazines, academic journals, whatever, producing content. This content is aggregated by services like EduRSS and remixed. What that means is EduRSS will bring the content in, organize it according to topic, and create new content feeds. And it's sometimes also repurposed. One of the things that I want EduRSS to do is it brings in content, but I want it also to bring in opinions, evaluation ratings, classification ratings. In other words, data from multiple sources about a single resource. People talk about metadata. They talk about it like it was the label on a soup can. But the label on a soup can is produced completely by the soup manufacturer. It'll tell you something about the soup, but it won't tell you everything you want to know about the soup. Like, for example, do you use that soup in that recipe? The recipes should also come in to be part of the information about the soup. So EduRSS is intended to bring in information from multiple sources to describe a particular resource. And then we feed this information forward to, well, I put consumers up there, but pretty much anything. And then the consumers, this is part of the evaluation ratings of a resource, feeds back in. So that feeds in on itself. And EduRSS or similar systems become not just an aggregation system, but a recommendation system. The resources that are of quality are detected and promoted to the top of the list, depending on how you ask for the list, by EduSource, based on what people actually thought of the resource. You have a lot of talk about things, learning object repositories. You have to do reviews, peer reviews, all of that. That takes too long. You put a resource into the system, if you like it, it will show up. So, that's about the time that I have. If you do look at the other slides, again, they'll be on my website later this afternoon. There's all kinds of blogging of new types of media, some examples of weblogs in various institutions. Weblogs at UPEI is a very interesting initiative you should take some time with. Some theory, and I do recommend that article by George Siemens on connectivism. He just wrote it a couple of days ago. It gets at some of the heart of this. And there's a little bit about connectivism. I just want to say one more thing very briefly. in addition to EduRSS, I've also created a site called DLORN, Distributed Learning Object Repository Network. And what DLORN does is it harvests not blog posts, but learning resources, learning objects to be precise. And DLORN brings these learning resources together and then does all of the things that EduRSS does. People are building these large, centralized repositories of learning resources that you need hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to build, and they've got a gazillion learning objects in them. But the thing is, that makes it hard for average people to contribute learning resources. Now, we've already seen Wikipedia. We've seen the sort of creativity that can be unleashed if we give people the chance to publish. And we've seen that systems like this can be self-organizing. We don't need some kind of top-down management of the organization of learning resources. What we need is the capacity to create a blogger of learning objects and a capacity to aggregate and remix. That's what DLORN is intended to demonstrate. Now you can link to DLORN from my website. Just click on my website and then projects and collaborations, and the link is right here. It's to DLORN, and there's DLORN, and there are some of the repositories now that are already contributing to it. The repositories create RSS feeds. DLORN harvests the RSS. And if you keep following my website, there'll be a lot more discussion of DLORN and associated technologies over the next year or so. That's all the time that I have. It's more than the time that I have, so thank you very much for coming out this morning. I really appreciate it, and stay in touch.
Seems we're out for questions. If you have, take a few minutes for questions.
In other words, you can leave now if you want. I won't feel bad, but I am willing to continue talking if you want.
I see the problem of, say, everybody goes towards a sort of an educational RSS feeds and that sort of thing. How do you start pairing out the relevant information for self when it's all automated? You know, I can go to a site and I can see the, you know, a gazillion articles, and then my eyes are going to glaze over and I'm just going to leave.
Sure.
And it's really difficult to kind of parse through the information and kind of come up with the relevant.
Well, let me tell you about how I approached BlogDigger. When I went to BlogDigger for the first time, the first feed that I subscribed to was my own. You went, oh, really egotistical. But the thing is, I subscribe to my feed. BlogDigger looks at the content of my feed and then recommends things to me. And so, basically what I'm doing is I'm expressing my interests using personal publishing of some sort, and then the things that are associated with my interests cluster themselves. The network clusters them for me. And all I need to do, and not everything is in place for yet, but all I need to do from there is indicate how broadly or how narrowly I want this clustering to happen. If I only have a little bit of time, I'll put my system in and then try to harvest only a very precise set of resources that matches what I have, what I'm interested in, is as narrowly as possible. Or if I have more time, I might make that clustering more broad. So having this as a network and being able to cluster resources is what solves that that information overload problem. And it's also what solves the search problem, because it'll get these resources to you without you investing any overhead yourself. Now, EduRSS does not currently support that, but it will at some point. I need to set up user accounts and stuff like that in EduRSS. But it's clear to me that this is already where it's headed. BlogDigger, as I say, already has some of this capacity built in, and as there are more and more RSS feeds there, it will become more and more important to pick your sources. What happens today is people pick a few of the top blogs, like Boing Boing or Clay Shirky or whatever, and they'll follow those blogs. But that's a kind of a hit and miss sort of thing. But I think content-based aggregation will be what narrows it down for you.
You have to make some choices too. Like with blog lines, I've got a subscription list, and then
right.
Every so often there's recommendations placed that based on what I'm subscribing to. Sometimes they're good, and sometimes they're not. So you just have to take a few minutes to check them out.
Yeah, and that's always going to be the case where you can make choices. Make more choices, fewer choices. It's going to be important, and people can always tweak the system to tailor the results to what they want. But I think as time goes by, it's going to be less and less necessary to make choices unless you want to. Today, it's still the case you have to, just from time to time, even on blog lines. But that's going to fade into the background, and that'll be the ones, that'll be what the power users do, right, is they'll go in and they'll tweak their list. But typically, the people will be pretty happy with the default.
Okay. Well, if that's all the questions, thank you all for coming.
Can I just throw one more little thing? You guys work in learning management systems, maybe? Work in learning simulations, learning environments, places where students are, or might have software or work environments. Take any of these, any online environment, and indeed any offline environment, a desk, a table, a jar of strawberry jam. Hook up the output of one of these RSS filtering systems, and you have learning, targeted learning on demand, specific to the resource and the person doing the learning. Just something to think about. Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks again, Steve.
No problem. The slides and the audio of this, as I say, will be on my website later this afternoon.
Oh, you've been recording.
Yeah.